All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. Continuing to discuss a bit more on the resource sector, I am chatting with Adrian Day, managing partner at Adrian Day Asset Management. Now, Adrian, I very much enjoy reading over your newsletter and also recapping the stocks that you are watching and the stocks that you are invested in. And one thing that I find so unique about the stocks that you're following is that it really is a wide net that you cast in terms of resource companies. You are invested in royalty and streaming companies, some of the larger miners, and you also dabble in some of the junior exploration companies. I want to spend this segment focused on the factors that you look at and that you are attracted to when it comes to each of these three categories. Let's start off with some of the larger miners. The larger miners have done well recently on the back of higher precious metals prices because, well, that directly impacts their bottom line and their financials. Plus, we did see this consolidation of the largest majors over the last about year and a half. Share with us some of the main factors that you need to see in terms of these larger miners that attract you to invest in them, please.
Yeah, okay. And Corey, thank you for having me. And that's really an interesting subject you've raised. We'll talk about the seniors in a second, but let me talk about a few things that affect the way I look at everything in the resource business. So the first thing is to sort of know yourself. And I know, but I'm not a geologist. And I realize that if I look at the geology of particular properties, which is important, of course, but I realize I don't have any particular leg up on any other investor when I'm doing that. And so obviously it's important, particularly if you're looking at an exploration play. But there are many, many people, you've had lots of them on your show, who are way ahead of me in that regard. So I tend to focus in all areas of the mining business. I tend to focus on other factors. And I think for all sectors, they're people, the management, and it's the balance sheet. Those are the two most important factors, frankly, in all of these sectors. And if we look at the seniors, for example, you know, in the mining business, even the seniors, oh, I don't know, let's look at Agnico, for example. It's a $14 billion market cap. Now, $14 billion is certainly a lot of money, but if you put it in context of Tesla, that's not quite fair, is it? But if you put it in the context of the broad market, the gold stocks are frankly small potatoes. And so management with smaller companies, management is more important than with large companies. And so even the large gold mining companies, management is critical. And frankly, we've seen that with, you know, I only have to name a handful like Franco-Nevada with Pierre Lassonde and David Harquill and and Seymour Schulich before that, of course, or Agnico with Steve Boyd, or, you know, we could go down the list and we realize that Barrick is a key example where management has made a critical difference. Same assets, same balance sheet, but management has made a critical difference with the change of management. So management is the number one, and you have to, you know, I don't mind whether the person who's running a company comes from a financial background or comes from a mining background, because obviously in a large company, if you come from a financial background, you hire the miners. If you come from a mining background, you hire the financial people. But management is number one. I think the balance sheet is also critical for large mining companies. We can see how in 2012, 11, 12, a lot of mining companies, a lot of companies took on excessive debt, and that would include Barrick, but excludes Franco and excludes Agnico. And you can see how in the weak period that followed, having that excessive debt, companies like Barrick really, truly hurt those. And Yamana, for example, hurt those stocks significantly, much more than the companies that didn't have a lot of debt. Now, mining is a cyclical business. It's a capital-intensive business. And so other than the royalties, you're always going to have debt at mining companies because it is a capital-intensive business. But I think it's largely how much debt, when you take on the debt, and what you're taking the debt on for. If it's to build a new mine, it's going to generate cash flow. That's you know, one thing and acceptable. So that's the second thing. And I think with the large mining companies, perhaps the most important thing to look at, other than those two, which we look at for all mining companies, is the pipeline. If a large mining company has whatever, 6, 10, 15 different mines, what is the life of some of their largest mines? Because a lot of investors simply look at, you know, this year, next year, and last year. But if one of your largest mines is going to start depleting, you know, in 3 years' time and depleting fairly rapidly, where are those ounces to replace it coming from? And so the pipeline of these companies and the time frame of the pipeline becomes critical. So I think those are the three things that I look at there.
Adrian, just a quick question regarding management as well. Everybody says, yes, management. You need to pay attention to management. And I completely agree with that. But when you read over management's bios on their websites, everyone's trying to gloss it up. Everyone is trying to sound better than they probably are. But what are some of those factors that you look for in terms of management? Is it people that have run and sold successful companies? Is it the most recent performance over the last couple of years? What are some of those characteristics of good management?
Good. That's a good question. And if we're still talking about the seniors, when you look at someone like Mark Bristow and you hear he is going to become the CEO, president, CEO of Barrick, and you look at what that man has done over the last 15 years, you say this is obviously a man with a great track record. I think that's important. I also think, frankly, I mean, I'm in a position of maybe some readers aren't, which is getting to know some of these people on a personal level, or when I say personal, getting to know them face-to-face, I should say. Occasionally breaking bread with them, going on mining trips or whatever. You see someone like Bristow, and I like to look at the way people interact. And, you know, Mark Bristow is certainly has a tougher edge to him than, say, Sean Boyd at Agnico. But both are equally in command of a situation, shall we say. And I think that's important for the CEO. They're on top of the situation and they're in command of it. And when you meet these people, when you hear them speak, you know, there are a lot of soft factors, and some people are very good at judging character and some people aren't. And I don't want to knock certain people, but let's just say there are some stocks that did not do very well over the last 10 years. And when you hear that person stand up and speak, and it's all about me, and how great I am and how different I am than everybody else in the business, that to me is a turnoff. And I think some of us can think of people like that in the industry. Some are no longer running the companies, but those companies tended not to do very well. But it's a lot of it is soft factors, frankly, the track record and the soft factors.
Okay, let's move over to some of the royalty and streaming companies. We've actually seen more royalty companies come back into the market. Those are tougher companies to get started, and I even know of a couple that are in the pipeline here. However, there's been some small royalty companies that have built a very good name for themselves. There are also the big royalty companies that have done very well over the last couple of years. What are the factors you consider in terms of these companies?
Well, management still, but I think it's a different mindset, isn't it? The person who's running a royalty company has to be much more sort of patient, if you like. I think one of the problems, for example, but let's say a Cisco is a company. Well, I'm not allowed to say what I like, but maybe I can say what I don't dislike. Compliance rules are silly sometimes, aren't they? But anyway, I think part of the sort of issue with a Cisco, in my mind, is that Sean Roozen, who is a man that I respect greatly, I sometimes wonder if he really has the sort of temperament to run a pure royalty company, where I think a different kind of mindset is needed. Someone like David Harcourt, for example, or over at Royal Gold, Tony Jensen, are the sort of epitome of people who run royalty companies. I think the critical thing with those companies is obviously you have to do your due diligence just as much as an operator does on buying a property, but you have to do the due diligence on acquiring the royalties, and you have to be extremely disciplined. I think that's the key. A operator or a developer, you want someone who's much more aggressive, someone who's willing to take big risks, because without taking those risks and without being aggressive, he's probably never going to achieve anything. With a royalty company, I think you don't need that as much as you need really strong discipline. People like, again, David Harquilla Franco have demonstrated that discipline. And so have some of the people in charge of the smaller companies, frankly. But it's critical for a royalty because of the competition that you alluded to, the increasing competition, and the very low rates of return on some of these royalties. It's critical that you're prepared to walk away when things aren't good. And the best companies have demonstrated it's what they don't buy rather than what they do buy. But that is critical and makes a company. Obviously, when it's a smaller company trying to grow, let's say something like Metalla, which has done remarkably well, but in the early period, they need to be much more aggressive in trying to get some cash flow, build some momentum without straying too far from the financial discipline again, but they have to be much more aggressive in trying to accumulate assets. And this is a company like Metalla. I'm not talking about Metalla specifically, to build that momentum. Because clearly, we all know this, the large royalty companies trade at incredible multiples. Franco-Nevada is trading at a 65 times PE, price earnings multiple. And I'm not saying they're undeserved. I'm not saying that at all. But the smaller royalty companies don't trade at the same kind of multiples. So they need to build that momentum with a diversified asset base as well. So that if something goes wrong at one of the mines they operate, you know, it doesn't affect the whole company too badly. And as they grow, then that multiple tends to expand. And I think that's one of the keys to a royalty is that you don't control the assets from which you generate your revenue. And again, that takes a much different mindset than an operator who's wanting to interfere and fix. But the royalty owner doesn't do that. So he has to be right up front to the extent that he can. And obviously, the more diversified your asset base, if you're a Franco and you've got royalty revenue from 40 different operating mines, well, or 39, if there's a failure at one of them, there's only so much damage it can do. Whereas if you're starting out and you only have two royalties that are producing cash, one of them goes wrong, it's a major disaster.
Yeah, very interesting and very good points in regarding just how different royalty and streaming companies to run are. Let's just get a couple comments on juniors then. Some of the exploration companies that you follow, I follow them as well, but what are the aspects that you like in terms of the juniors besides management? Management carries over to all of this.
Okay, yeah, management carries over, but of course, the smaller the company, the more critical management is to the success of that company. That I think we need to say. And I do, when I'm investing in juniors in particular, I really insist on getting to know management. And little things matter a lot. Or little things can be signs of big things, rather. That's maybe the way I should say it. If you're at a restaurant and the CEO wants to order the most expensive wine on the list just to impress the people he's with, and if he talks down to the waiter, is he ever really going to be able to go to whatever, Mexico, Peru, and talk to the local people and try to get them on side? That's the way he treats people in the United States. So I think that's important. Other things I look at very much, the balance sheet, the cash, and then everything that goes along with that. How much cash do they have? What's the budget for the next year or two? So how long is that cash going to last? How much of that spending is discretionary, so could be cut down, you know, if need be? How much of the budget goes on G&A and not in the ground? You know, I've seen junior companies where 80, 90% of the money that they raise from a financing is just going to pay the office and the salaries, and hardly any of it's going in the ground. You want to avoid that. And you know, how much we have to realize that any exploration, most exploration, vast majority of exploration companies do not have any revenue. And so therefore, they have to raise money and dilute themselves in order to keep going. And that is an ongoing process until they reach a point where they have cash flow or can sell a project and have a huge balance sheet. But nonetheless, you really want to minimize that dilution. And I have talked about this, many, many times. I'm just pulling up a couple now, if I may. Here's one from 2013 and to this year. The number of shares outstanding has gone from 7.5 to 97. That's in 6 years. That means the company's value has to go up about 12-fold just for the value of each share to stay where it is. These things don't happen very often. Let's just take another example. And, you know, you wonder why some companies don't do well. It's because of this dilution. Let me just pull this up. And this one has gone from 2011... 2 million shares outstanding to 59 million shares out today. So that's 30 times dilution in 8 years, 30 times the number of shares outstanding. So again, we have to look at how much cash they have and how long it'll last before they need more financing. And the best way of doing that, frankly, the SEC says past is not indicative of the future, and we have to say that all the time. But Winston Churchill once said, but it's the best indicator we have. So if you look at what is a company with the same management, what has that management done in the past with regard to dilution? And, you know, again, that's another example. Then you look at other companies, like let's just take Lara as an example, which has had very modest dilution, again, for companies that do not have consistent cash flow. We've got to remember that when you're a exploration company, you don't have consistent cash flow. So from 2012, it was at about 31 million shares outstanding. They just did a financing this year, and they're now at 38 million shares outstanding. But that is a lot lower, a lot less dilution than the other two examples I gave. And that's a key that I look at. And then, of course, you need to look at, well, what projects do they have? Are any of them attractive? Are, you know, is the management flexible in terms of doing deals? Because there are companies, frankly, junior companies, that stand out for too much. And, you know, they're always saying they're doing the right thing by shareholders, but sometimes they're holding out for too much, and in the end they ruin what could have been a perfectly good opportunity, whether that's selling a particular asset, whether it's doing a joint venture. Oh, this project is the best project in Canada in the last 30 years. We need a good joint venture company, you know, and I'm not doing it for less than XYZ. And they've got to pay us to get into the joint venture and so on. Well, you've got to be realistic, and you've got to look at what the market, you know, what the market is allowing at any particular time. And perhaps, you know, more than deals on particular projects is when there's a lot of discussion, as you know, about merging some of these juniors, because there are just too many of them out there. And of course, that means that the overhead at these small companies is very large. Again, many, many, many times, 25, 30, or even half of the cash raised, this is fairly typical, goes towards G&A. If you merge some of them and create a somewhat bigger company, you can reduce that amount of G&A. Too many of these proposed mergers have fallen apart because, you know, the guy that's run a lifestyle company for 20 years, you know, and it's a 10 million market cap company. I'm not talking about a particular one now, so I hope this doesn't fit the bill. But, you know, he's got a lifestyle company. He's taking a $400,000 salary. It's a $10 million market cap. And someone comes along and wants to merge. And he wants 3 years salary as a takeout. And, you know, no one's going to pay that. And I think that's really hurting the industry, frankly.
All right, Adrian, we're going to wrap it up there. So much does come down to track record of the management teams, yes, and diving down into share structure, also important, and yeah, even talking to management. Most shareholders, you can get in touch with management, or even reach out to me. I can get in touch with management for you, and that is a huge determinant, even for me, into where to invest. I hope everybody enjoyed this conversation, found it useful. Please comment or email me with any more thoughts on what you look for and what you weigh when it comes to some of the companies that you are investing in. That does it for the first hour of the weekend show. I hope everybody enjoyed this first hour. And as I said, keep in touch, fleck@kereport.com. Adrian, thanks for your time this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Well, and you, thank you very much.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.